An Irish Independent digital subscription doesn't just get you the news. It gets you the best of Ireland's stories all in one place. Whether it's the best of politics, business, sport, entertainment or lifestyle. Get it all for just €4 a month for 12 months when you first subscribe. Visit independent.ie/subscribe today. Irish Independent. Terms and conditions apply. Cancel anytime.
On this week's Big Tech Show, when you travel, how do you avoid getting completely ripped off on roaming charges outside of Europe? And what are some of the travel hacks you should know about that aren't included in the tech you buy? We give you all the tips you need to know.
On top of my list, Adrian, is my noise-cancelling headphones. When I put them on, I love that it just goes boom, and you're in this kind of sonic bubble and you can't hear the baby and you can't hear that weird frequency of the aircon on the airplane.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the King, Mr. Comedy, Seal Fox!
Beloved for his sharp sense of humour and seemingly endless energy, veteran Irish comedian Sylvester Seal Fox has been making him laugh for decades.
I don't know the toll bridge, you know the toll bridge? And I forgot my money. I threw a Viagra tablet in. And I got back 4 hours after, geez, the barrio was still up.
But things took a decidedly more tragic turn for the veteran performer in December 2018 when he was accused of sexual assault.
I was approached one day by a Garda who said that there was a charge against me for a sexual assault with a woman while they asked me to have a selfie.
Fox maintained his innocence and was later cleared of all wrongdoing, but the case still haunts him today.
I was more or less gone into a recluse, you know.
As he prepares to turn 91 years young, Fox is still fighting for his name as he races against time to take on Ireland's justice system.
And I did ask the judge to give me a bit of anonymity, whatever you call it. So they said no.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Paul Williams, special correspondent with the Irish Independent, to look at the court case that nearly brought an end to the career of one of Ireland's greatest entertainers and his fight against the DPP for his injustice. Paul, Sylvester Fox, Seal Fox, better known to people across the country, tell us about him and his place in the Irish comedy industry.
Well, Seal Fox, next month, is 91 years of age. And the extraordinary thing is that he has been performing all these years. And he's been on the road for well over 60 years. So the man's a national treasure. I suppose the best way to describe him is that his shtick, so to speak, is good old-fashioned safe humour. It's the kind of stuff that the jokes he was telling in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and probably even today, the kind of jokes that wouldn't offend the most sensitive of woke souls.
Are you a plastic surgeon? He said, yes, mother, what can I do for you? She, would you ever put a handle on me bucket?
It was that for a reason why he was so much loved. And, you know, he was quite literally the grandfather of Irish comedy. He's the longest, I'd say the longest living performing artist in Ireland.
This is a guy who came from an impoverished background. Father dies at an early age. You know, went through working class, regular jobs, probably shaped him. And then, he comes from that kind of tradition of the old fella literally just standing up on the mic inside in the pubs and clubs and the dance halls across the country and warming up the crowd with a few old gags.
Yeah, and he started this probably by accident, cracking gags at work, and people said he's very funny, a bit like Billy Connolly. I remember reading about him years ago. He was very funny at work. And when he was starting off, Ireland was in the grip of different emigration cycles, and it was economically were very depressed. And that's why, you know, the man brought a smile to the faces of the Irish people in the grimmest and most depressing of times.
And he was still up on the circuit up until recent years.
He would actually be on the circuit today if it wasn't for what happened to him in the past few years.
But he was a regular on Funny Friday, coming in with the old the gags about the fella down the road, the man with the dog, and so on.
The mother-in-law said to me, or the missus said to me.
Yeah, and all just the classic old one-er. They weren't lengthy anecdotes that you get from kind of your modern comedians or trying to be too smart. They were just opening line, punchline, bang.
It was what you call good old clean fun. He's still good and hale and hearty enough. He wants to get up on stage until the day he decides to pass over.
Yeah, even his gag about how he got into comedy. He was working in a hat manufacturer's. The Pope issued a decree that women no longer needed to wear hats to church on a Sunday. So the hat market collapsed literally overnight. So Cyril said, "The Pope made me a comedian." That was the line. So take me back then to 6 years ago, 2018. What happened?
On December 17, 2018, he was out socialising one night with some friends in a bar, a venue in the south inner city. And there must have been some show going on earlier that night. And there were a lot of people, you know, wanted to pose for selfies. And one of the things this man has always done, he's a very good relationship with his public. And he'd always pose for pictures and all of that kind of stuff. And one woman was very, very anxious to get his attention and get a selfie with him. And so he came over to this woman's table and her friend took this picture, a selfie with him, standing beside her, smiling. And then he moved on to someone else. Now, later that night, this woman approached him and alleged quite publicly to him that, you know, you assaulted me or you did something quite inappropriate. And the allegation was that he had touched her very inappropriately, actually sexually assaulted her by touching her in an intimate way. And apparently his reaction was, "What are you talking about?" She then goes to the Gardaí and makes a complaint. The Gardaí launch an investigation, which they're compelled to do. They interviewed her. They interviewed her friends, none of whom said they saw anything untoward happening on that particular night. And then they interviewed Cyril Fox at his home. And then he was brought in, I believe, officially for questioning. And he completely denied that anything of an inappropriate nature had taken place. A file was sent to the Director of Public Prosecutions subsequently, which the Gardaí are duty bound to do. And the DPP decided that he would be charged with a count of sexual assault against the woman. And that's where Cyril Fox's nightmare begins.
And Paul, Cyril Fox has spoken about the case and its impact on him to the Sunday Independent.
Yeah, it was really unbelievable what happened. And I said to the guard, I said, "You have me on or something like this, because I wouldn't do anything like that. I never have and never in trouble in my life."
I think one of the things he said in the notes that were read in court at the time, you know, he just described it as absolute crap. He was, you could clearly see that he was very shocked by this.
The issue here was, though, that it became public that a figure in the Irish entertainment industry was facing sexual assault charges.
Yeah. And this is where insult was piled on a mountain of humiliation for and devastation for this man, because it's a summary offence. The case was to be heard in the district court because of the fact his household name is celebrity. And to be charged by something like this publicly would be devastating. His lawyers applied to the court so that he could be anonymised, that there would be restrictions placed on the reporting of the case in the sense that his name would not be used. And they said because it would be devastating for his reputation.
So he said, "Well, we're putting the charge, we're going ahead with it." So they went ahead and I was in court and I did ask the judge to give me a bit of anonymity, or whatever you call it.
The court turned that down and Cyril Fox was exposed to the world as this famous comedian who is facing, it's a very, no matter what kind of sexual assault, it's a serious charge.
So they put my name and my photograph in all the papers.
And when you consider that this is coming on the back of an international trend where so many well-known celebrities in so many countries were accused and rightfully convicted and found to have been deviants, there is no such thing as smoke without fire. However, Cyril Fox was very much like Cliff Richard. Cliff Richard was exposed to the world and he was completely innocent.
So what happened to Cyril Fox's career and friends basically overnight once his name started to emerge as the person who was involved in this case?
He was just cancelled overnight. His reputation was eviscerated overnight, literally. And the phone stopped ringing, as he said himself.
And it was devastating because any bookings I had were cancelled. And my radio show was cancelled as well. So I was more or less gone into a recluse, you know.
RT, of course, ran for the woods. They couldn't have him on. And it probably quite rightly too, if somebody's accused of such a serious offence. He said a lot of friends and people who he considered good friends to his career all dropped him like a hot brick. And apart from his family and a very small cohort of friends.
I couldn't believe that it was happening to me, you know, when I didn't feel as if I wanted to mix with people anymore. Until such time as all this was all cleared up.
He was abandoned and he slipped into this deep, deep depression.
You're saying your wife doesn't live with you at the moment?
No, she was diagnosed with dementia and she's a year and nearly 18 months in Kilsipper Nursing Home. But she more or less developed dementia during the trial time. So I'm a loner here after 64 years of married life.
To think about this happened, Fiona, when the man was 85. And as I said in the Indo piece, it would kill a man half his age, the stress of it. It was an enormous thing to happen. And what he seemed to find himself in, which some people do find themselves in the situation whereby he was on the back foot. You're guilty until proven innocent here, especially in the court of public opinion.
What happened in court then?
Well, ultimately, there was CCTV of this infamous encounter. The complainant alleged that this encounter lasted for about 30 seconds and that Cyril Fox assaulted her during that period with his left hand. And the video clearly showed it only took 3 seconds for this encounter to take place. And during that entire time, his hand was clearly visible on the table where he used it to balance himself when he was standing with the woman for a picture. And the judge looked at this and said, there is absolutely no evidence to support the charge, and threw it out. But this was after Cyril Fox had gone through about 2 years of pure hell.
So, effectively, a case was brought. A judge determined, after looking at the evidence, that there was insufficient evidence here.
That it never took place.
So, effectively, Cyril Fox, basically, is declared innocent of these charges.
Technically, Cyril Fox got justice that day. He walked away an innocent man. He walked away an exonerated man. But it's not that simple. Like, a miscarriage of justice is where somebody is wrongly accused of something and they're charged and the evidence is put against them in court and they're convicted and it's later proved that the whole thing is wrong. And that's called a miscarriage of justice. He got, in the theoretical field of jurisprudence, he got justice. However, he suffered the gravest of injustices because here's this man, he's now 91, and he's still now trying to clear his name.
I haven't performed on stage now for the last year and a half. I never thought it would end like this. I was going to go out on a big, you know, retiring. But this thing really ruined my life, this case. So I more or less am retired now, which I had to be because it's a bit late to start it all over again.
Tell us this. Cyril Fox, he hasn't taken this situation lying down. He's actually proceeding now with his own litigation.
He is. 2 years ago, he launched proceedings, which is very, very rare, by the way. Proceedings against the DPP and the government and the Gardaí Síochána with the minister and the Gardaí, but principally it's the DPP, where he wants an apology and he's suing them for damages because of the egregious damage all of this has done to his reputation and to his good health and his life. And as I say, that is a very, very rare situation to take place.
Why is that rare? Because surely there's plenty of people who are charged with things by the DPP and the case is thrown out. And people come back and go, well, I should get some compensation here for the accusations being made against me.
Well, a lot of people who find themselves in situations in court where they're acquitted and they get justice, they're glad to get the hell out the door. Think of Jerry Hutch, for example. He was quite happy to get his justice and he left. What's different about this is that the main evidence in this case is the CCTV footage. Now, that was circulated when Silfox was charged first. And I got a copy of it, like lots of other journalists did. And the first thing you notice when you look at it, you have a feeling maybe there's something else here. But when you looked at the bit of CCTV and you're told this is what the state is dependent on, I actually didn't believe it. I thought, well, there's clearly no evidence in that. And I'm not a qualified barrister. But somebody in the DPP's office decided that that was enough to charge him with this very serious criminal offence. And following on from that, would have been conscious of the fact that this would absolutely destroy this man's reputation. Because anyone who's charged with an offence and is made public, whether you like it or not, that damages them irrevocably.
It says there. So, Silfox, he has another argument here that his name was made public when basically he was only facing charges. He was ultimately acquitted, but his name was fully out there.
That's why he made the application that he would be anonymized while this is going on. And by the way, that's not unprecedented.
So he's looking for a change in basically the system that is in place at the moment in that regard.
When we go back to his case, it's very rare. The DPP as an institution is, and quite rightly, is rigorously independent. And that's there for a reason, for the good administration of justice and the equitable administration of justice. You can't have people interfering with the decision of the DPP. And the DPP adopts a position of never explain, never apologise, because they're not obliged to do so or to explain their thinking in cases. However, it doesn't mean that the DPP is infallible or incapable of getting something wrong. And what happened in this case was that the judge in the district court who just analysed the CCTV and said, look, there is no case to answer here. I'm throwing it out. So Silfox has a very powerful argument, but he is still waiting for the DPP even to come back to respond to his proceedings. As he said himself very poignantly, are they waiting for me to die?
I'd like to get an apology from them of ruining my life, you know, and to think that they could do that to a person.
Like, the man has suffered a genuinely grave injustice here. You get to that level, the final furlong in life, you know, as he would say himself, in God's waiting room. And next thing, everything that you stood for and everything that you've lived for all your life is just torn apart like that.
Will you avoid selfies in the future now because of this?
I certainly will, or else I'll charge a million and just quit like this. Yeah, picture behind us is... Hello.
And my thanks to Paul Williams. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by Ian Doyle, researched by Dave Hanratty, with sound by Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips from RTE, The Irish Independent, and The Sunday Independent. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to follow the podcast and leave us a review.
This week on Crime World...
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.